Malcolm Gladwell, the author of such well-known books as The Tipping Point and Blink, is getting heat this week for comments he made against working from home. Here he is on the Diary of a CEO podcast.
We want you to have a feeling of belonging and to feel necessary. We want you to join our team. And if you're not here, it's really hard to do that. It's not in your best interest to work at home. I know it's a hassle to come to the office, but like, you know, if you're just sitting in your pajamas in your bedroom, is that the work life you want to live, right? Don't you want to feel part of something?
Observers on Twitter were quick to point out that Gladwell had a reputation for working from home. And those who've embraced working from home say it helps with childcare and gives them a better work-life balance. In a column in the Los Angeles Times, Mary McNamara wrote, quote, "If Gladwell and others are truly concerned about the psychological state of the workforce, they would do well to remember that everyone's needs are different and that those needs often change," end quote. This conversation about the work we do and where we do it from has led us to reconsider a question we pondered last year. Does your job define you? Here's what Ruthie Woodring of Northampton, Massachusetts, and Ty Harrell of Raleigh, North Carolina, told us last fall.
My job definitely defines who I am. That's how people see me.
I think that in many circles, it does define who you are.
Well, if you find yourself in a similar camp, our next guest would like you to think differently about how much your job dictates who you are. Arthur Brooks is a contributing writer for The Atlantic who wrote a piece titled, "A Profession is Not a Personality." Here is our conversation from last October. You say that Americans tend to glorify being driven and ambitious, and these days letting work take over your life is easier than ever. What's the case you're building here for bringing balance?
It's a happiness case, and it's extraordinary to me how many people have defined themselves with their work, and they get into their 40s and 50s and they realize that they've not been fully alive. And the reason for that is that work is important for a happy life, but relationships for which we're not compensated are a lot more important. And so if you're basically a human that's defined by work, if you objectify yourself with respect to your job, you're frankly going to miss most of the important things that can make you happy.
In fact, you say striving for success at work and expecting both satisfaction and happiness, we're setting ourselves up for, quote, joyless accomplishment and unreachable goals followed by the tragedy of inevitable decline. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, what I find, and most people know this sort of intuitively, but it's really, really clear in the research, is that people who are, particularly those who are good at their jobs, they get rewarded for it. And you do more of what you're incentivized to do. And when people pat you on the back and say, great job, and give you a bunch of worldly rewards like money and promotions on the basis of it, you're going to do it more and more and more. And then increasingly, you start to look at each additional hour in your life and you kind of work on what economists call marginal thinking, which is this hour, what's its highest and best use? And it's very easy for the 14th hour to be spent at work as opposed to the first hour at home. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I find for people who are real workaholics and addicted to success is that they don't have any real friendships. You could say that they have a lot of deal friends, but no real friends.
And so you pose these questions that you suggest we ask ourselves. Is your job the biggest part of your identity? Are you sacrificing love relationships for work? Do you have trouble imagining being happy if you were to lose your job? So those are some examples of some questions to ask. And what if the answer is yes?
Well, then it's time to reassess. And again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't take satisfaction in our jobs, but your faith and your family and your friendships, these are things that we just can't neglect. And no time is the wrong time to actually start focusing on the love relationships that we can and should see in our lives and that we all deserve.
And at the same time, we live in a time of high costs for housing, for healthcare, for education. And economists have found that many Americans are working more than in years past. And for so many, it's not really a choice. It's an economic necessity.
Yeah. But the attitude that we have about how we see ourselves really is our choice. And what I find is that a lot of people, they have to work hard because they have to pay the rent for sure. But they still don't define themselves as a work machine. They don't get their entire sense of self-worth from that. The point of your work is to serve other people and to serve your relationships and to be a complement to the love that's actually in your life. And when it's crowding out the love in your life and when it's how you understand yourself, that's a big problem. That's actually a recipe for dissatisfaction, even misery.
How should we reshape our relationship with our jobs and our identity?
Well, there are a lot of different ways to do this. And one of the things that I always recommend is that people keep Sabbath a little bit. I don't mean that in a religious context. That's up to every one of our listeners to decide. But the point is to make rest and completely away from work sacred, to take it really seriously. So it's like, okay, I guess I won't go into the office on Sundays, but I'm going to check my email all day long. And I'm going to start at 5 a.m. and go till 11. You're just at the office. You need time away where you're specifically away and engaged in other things. That's important. The other thing is to make sure that you do have real friends and not just deal friends. People who don't treat you as an economic tool or see you only as somebody who's incredibly good at their job. And finally, if you want to go big, this is what I do, is I take my own career completely down to the studs every 10 years and start over.
What about people for whom reinventing themselves is really not an option? You know, they're working three jobs to make ends meet. You know, maybe you're on a work visa. You're completely dependent on your job. I mean, those people must define themselves differently than some others.
Well, it's true. And so there's a lot of privilege attached to being able to change your careers. Although I know lots and lots of people who are not in upper middle income categories who are able to get new skills and do new things pretty frequently so that they can be fortified by learning new things without being completely identified with it. And quite frankly, some of the people who have the best relationship with their work are people who are working hard, they're supporting their families, but they're working hard to support their families and to create value and come home from work and they're home from work. And they have an extremely healthy relationship with their jobs.
You've mentioned your history, and I'm seeing here that before you joined Harvard, you spent a decade as president of the American Enterprise Institute, which is a conservative-leaning think tank in Washington. Many conservatives have pushed back against the idea of raising the minimum wage, making college affordable, expanding health care access. And I'm curious, as I'm listening to this conversation, wouldn't expanding the social safety net make it easier for people to work less and define themselves less by their jobs?
It could. And I think that the social safety net is truly the greatest achievement of the free enterprise system. But I think that there's a lot of ways that we can work together where iron can sharpen iron between the preference that a lot of progressives have for people at the margins of society and the way that a lot of conservatives think about an entrepreneurial economy. These shouldn't be incompatibilities. On the contrary, I've tried to dedicate a lot of my career to finding compromise and interesting solutions from both sides.
Let's listen now to Peggy Wren. She's a listener from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. She tells us that she spent a better part of her career as a journalist in New York. She changed careers working for a startup, and then she moved to Lancaster, and she was laid off at the beginning of the pandemic. Here's Penny.
I feel like I'm a walking dead person because I have always identified myself by my job. I've been unemployed for so long, and I was also kind of leaning into my identity as a caretaker for my elderly father, and he just passed away. So now I'm left without an identity, and I really don't know where to start. I'm at a loss now.
Hmm. So what advice do you have for people like Penny who are out of the workforce, struggling to figure out what their identity actually is? They don't have a job.
It's really tough because so many people have kind of been all in on their careers for so long. And the truth is, we're all going to be in that situation sooner or later because there's decline that comes in every career. And so we have to think about this in advance. So my guess is that what she will do, I hope that what she does and the advice that I would give her and advice I would give myself and you and all of us is to be investing in those other accounts of your faith. Something that gives you a big philosophical adventure, your family relationships, the ties that bind that shouldn't ever break, especially, by the way, for political reasons. And then the friendship, which are the most intimate relationships that we have in our lives. And these are the ties that we choose. And focusing on those gives an entirely new sense of the answer to the question, who am I?
I think about public defenders or community organizers or artists or doctors or individuals who express their passion and seek purpose through their careers. Isn't there some benefit to caring deeply about your career and defining yourself by it?
It's important to care deeply about your career because each of us has the opportunity to answer the question, why do I do what I do? I mean, the problem is actually that that's not the question that we ask when we're obsessed with our careers and we objectify ourselves. That's the what do you do question. So people, whenever you're in a conversation with a new person, and you're looking for an opportunity to talk about your work or state your job title, then something exogenous has become too central to your identity. The key thing that's most important is the why. Why do you do what you do? And if you find as a public defender or as an activist or advocate, if you're dedicated to the why of lifting people up and bringing them together, then there's a million ways that you can do it. You can do it professionally. You can do it non-professionally. You can do it at the micro level. You can do it at the macro level. And that through line in your life should be why, not what.
My conversation with Arthur Brooks from last October.